Hello.
It's the motherfucking Millennial Miha podcast.
Welcome back to the Millennial Miha podcast. What is up, y'all? I'm excited because today I get to interview my friend, but also somebody who is very inspiring and very interesting to me. And just somebody I want to know more about and learn more from. Her name is Valentina Pereda, and she is a documentary filmmaker. So I'm waiting for her to come on live right now. Hopefully she... Hola, amiga. Hi, Leti. Leti is a celebrity makeup artist, so if y'all want to go follow her, follow Leti Myers. Raquel! Hey, girl. Raquel just recently is helping me edit this podcast, so shout out to her. Nat! Hi, Nat! Oh, I'm going to say hi to everybody. What's up, guys? I am about to go live with my friend Valentina, who is a documentary filmmaker, and we are about to, do another episode of the Millennial Miha podcast. I'm happy to be here because I have been gone for a while. Like, I have not been podcasting because, to be honest, I was fucking depressed. So, you know, it's like a roller coaster, you know, it goes up and down, and you kind of just have to write it and do the best you can when you can. And yes, my hair is looking bomb. Yes, thank you. I took the time to do it. Gracias. So I'm excited to talk to Valentina. She's somebody that I met on Clubhouse. And Clubhouse, if y'all don't know, is this new app that is basically like the Party Line, but not the same, I guess. I don't know. You can see their pictures. But what it comes down to for Clubhouse, I guess the whole point of it was supposed to be like a networking app. So it's people from all industries coming together. It was kind of like exclusive at first, but now I feel like they're opening it up to other people to come and join and have conversations. Because what it is an exchange of knowledge. And that's what's really cool about it to me. There's definitely some pettiness to it. Like there's like the networking aspect of it. And then there's like the social aspect of it. And I feel like I've actually really made friends on here. And Valentina is one of them. Hey, girl, she's here. Okay. She's international right now, y'all. She's in El Salvador as we speak. Here she comes. Oh, shit, it worked. You saw that? The drum roll?
Drum roll. You did it.
Did you just come back from the beach or what's going on here? You look very sun-kissed and beautiful.
I took a shower and I am bare-faced. No, just kidding. I put a little mascara.
Not much is needed when you're a bad bitch, okay? Not much is needed.
I mean, you know, what can I say?
Well, welcome to the Millennial Miha podcast, Valentina.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I am such a fan of you, Angela. Like, you know this.
Stop it. So I was just telling everybody that I met you on Clubhouse, and you are... You're like the Laura Croft of Clubhouse, like the, because you're just like, you're an adventurous person and you're just like, I love the fact that you're down there in El Salvador right now. I was telling them that you're a documentary filmmaker. So if you just want to like, tell us about your trip, what are you doing down there right now?
Yeah. So for the past 3 years, I've been shooting a film down here, a very, very difficult film down here on a church that is rehabilitating former gang members. And it's, you know, it's a very, very intimate story. It's not, I mean, of course it talks about, the story of course touches on the violence and the gangs and what's been going on here, but really because it's taken me such a long time to shoot this film, I've been able to really get intimately into the lives of these people, of their families, of, you know, all of these big turning points in their lives that they've had to go through since they've been released from prison. And as they're trying to just start all over again especially in a country that's so small and like so concentrated. So like in the, you know, the US, it's a very large country. So if you have a life, you get out of prison, you can kind of move to another state and disappear and, you know, start a whole new life over. Like, nobody has any idea who you are. But here in El Salvador, particularly, especially, you know, El Salvador is a very, very tiny country. It's like the size of New Jersey. And what happens is that you can't go anywhere. Like, you can't hide anywhere. Even if you hide, you will be found sooner or later. And especially if you're heavily tatted, you know, it's something that, like, you can never escape from.
Yeah, yeah. The log line for, I was preparing and rewatching the trailer. It's called Lambs and Wolves. And it said the log line is, an El Salvador church led by deportee and former LA gang member Will Gomez welcomes a reformed leader of the brutal 18th Street gang, Julio, and his 10-year-old son, Byron. Together, they navigate Julio's newfound freedom in a hostile and unforgiving world. And when I saw this trailer, it made me emotional. It made me really emotional because we had just finished talking about my project. And so mm-hmm. it was like this very interesting exchange, because what the story ultimately about is redemption. And 100%. And I think that was something that I bonded with you with, not just with our conversation, but through your art. Like, I can see how important this is to you, this story is to tell. And mm-hmm. So what made you choose that subject? Like, what compelled you to get started on this subject specifically?
You know, I have to say that it's been a project that has taken me such a long time to make, but I believe in like divine timing of everything. And I think that precisely the reason it's taken me so long to do it was because my initial intention when I started filming was not pure. Mm. You know, so I used to work with the Obama administration. I used to work at the Obama White House, and you know, it was a hot shot out there with all these people. Like, when Trump got elected, I wanted to like magically move to Central America and like have this like huge career as like a video journalist, and everyone was gonna like accept my pitches, and because obviously it came from like the Obama admin, you know, I was so like high on myself. Like, I had no fucking idea. Like, I thought I was like the coolest shit. And I came.
No, just when the story was getting good.
Like, nobody gives a fuck about
okay.
you.
Wait, because you kind of like froze. So kind of answer, start over, kind of.
Sorry. No, I said that when I moved to El Salvador, like, I really felt that, like, just because of who I used to be, like, that everyone was going to, like, welcome me, like, so openly. And I was going to, like, be, like, this hotshot because that's who I was. And then when I moved here, I really quickly learned that, like, once you're not in a position of power, like, nobody gives a fuck about you. Like, you know, like, everyone, all these like top editors and journalists and stuff like that, because I used to do press at the White House, nobody was helping me. Like, nobody. Like, I was just like a nobody again. And that was very humbling. It was hurtful, of course, right? When you have like such a strong identity, and then
in one world, and then you move to the other world and you're a nobody, essentially. Yeah.
And you have to rebuild yourself from scratch. And that's what happened to me here. And in a way, it was never my intention. Film is about that. It's about abandoning an identity of power, which a lot of these gang members, you know, they were in different positions of power and acceptance. You know, they had an identity, and completely abandoning that and trying to be reborn and kind of, you know, I wouldn't even say it's like rebuild their identity. I would say it's them coming back home to their original identity, which is all of us. We are beings of love and light in the most purest form. I mean, you see a child does not have the ability to hate in their heart at that moment. For them, everything is just love and like, you know, and that's who we are in the deepest, deepest part of our nature.
Absolutely. And then
individual lives that take us to, you know, our lives get rough and things happen to us and the societies we live in. I mean, it's like, we're so lucky if we're in a good position in our lives, no matter what, like, no matter how difficult we are, we're so lucky that we had the life that we have, because it could very easily be, you know, a kid that's just been, you know, I just met a kid that was just locked up for 6 years in like the worst cell conditions. Like, he tells me that like in a cell of 80 people, there were like 200 men, all of them just like almost like sleeping for 3 months, like, you know, on each other. And you're just like, fuck, this kid is 24 years old. And like, look at the life that kid has had. And a lot of it has just been circumstances. Like, it is circumstantial. It is luck of where we are born.
Yeah.
Since we are born.
It's the genetic lottery. It's a genetic lottery. Like, it really could be us in any situation, like, you know, because we are all human. I'm when you were telling me initially about the project, it sounded very like close to you. Like it sounded very like you were almost telling your own story, and you were, you know, I wanted to know, this is my question. Are there things that you saw while filming that you wish you never saw?
You know, because this film has taken such a long time, I've actually grown very close to the characters. And that's something that is difficult. And when you're making these kinds of films, I've lost friends, people that were characters in the film. You know, one of them passed away from COVID. And it's hard because right now we are in the final stages of production. So essentially in the endings. And, you know, and the endings are very, very sad. Like, it's very sad what is going to happen to Byron, to the boy, because now both of his son, his mom and his dad, both that were, you know, on trial, which we filmed all this, now, you know, they've been sentenced 15 years each. And then what happens to that little boy? Like, you know, where does he go? You know, what happens to Byron, right? Like, yeah. Now both go back to prison. So when you see, like, and then, you know, and then you see, like, the privilege. I think that's the thing that we're, like, my the part of me as a director starts getting inserted in the story, because I, as a director, live such a privileged life here in El Salvador. Like, I'm filming in the most, like, gang-controlled, most poverty-stricken communities. And then I drive my ass to El Tunco, which is, like, the surf beach, or El Sonte, which is this other surf beach where there's, like, a bunch of, you know, like, tourists and white people,
more developed,
and we live in like a literal bubble. Like, we live in a literal bubble, and we're like smoking weed and stuff like that. And then I have to, like, you know, like,
go back into that world,
the world, and interview people that, you know, that just for like having a little joint, they got thrown in jail for 2 years in like the most horrible condition. And here I can be like going into this little surf town after I'm done filming these very difficult things and, like, you know, hanging out with my friends. So it's like also understanding that, like, man, it's so complicated, because in the U.S., when you live in the U.S., you're not faced with those disparities in such like a black and white way, like such an unfair, unjust way. Yes, in some communities you see it, but like not in this way. It's here, like, you know, you really have to, like, ask yourself a lot, like, damn, like, why did I get this good life? Why me? Like, what? Yeah. Like, and really, it humbles you and makes you be so grateful for the life that you have, no matter how hard it is. But I'm not in that situation. Like, I'm not, like, one of the women that I follow in my film, like, she's literally running for her life. Like, and it's just, wow, how do people wake up every morning when you have, like, problems of that scale?
Yeah. So, the, like, what it sounds like is, like, you know, it's like a reliving of, you know, Washington. And because I know you didn't grow up rich, right? You didn't, you know, have like the whole silver spoon thing, like that wasn't given to you. But then you got this because of your ambition and your intelligence and your accomplishments. You were able to, like, get your way into Washington, you know, like, get your way into this world that is it's an alternate reality, because they say most politicians don't know, you know, the price of milk, you know, like, no. they're so far removed from the actual real world that, you know, it's the same concept that you're saying over there in El Salvador. Like, you're
even in Washington, like, you know, I come from an immigrant family. Like, my mom was undocumented, but even in Washington, when I started rising in the ranks there and I started making more money, getting more power, all of this, I started noticing, like, my other colleagues that had also come from similar backgrounds, they were also making money and all that stuff. And what happens is, like, you start, like, drinking the Kool-Aid, we say out there. Mm-hmm. Like, you start so comfortable with the money and the, you know, and the access and the power and stuff. But then you have to notice that you have to, like, keep your mouth shut about a lot of things that you're like, wait, but why is this still? And it's like, no, don't, like, shut up.
Yeah, because it's like, it's an exchange. It's like, okay, if you want this life, then you have to give us this part of you, which is your silence and your complicity, almost.
100%. I mean, when you work in politics, like, 100%, like, unless you're like AOC or in like a super progressive, everything has, like, of course, you know, everything has to have like a structure and an order, and I get that. But I thought, like, going to politics would be like a liberating thing, and I found it actually to be very restricting for me, who I'm somebody that, like, I like to always see what's going on and speak what I believe eyewitness does the truth. And so that's why when Trump got elected, I was like, well, am I going to stay in Washington and, like, go work for some, like, random congressman and be miserable, or, like, go work for Facebook like a lot of my old colleagues did and get a lot of money and shit?
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, I have nothing better to do. So I moved here and I started doing video journalism.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in New York. I grew up in the tri-state area between New York and Connecticut and Venezuela as a child, to be honest. And then I went to, yeah, I went to school in Washington, D.C. And yeah, but I've always kind of like jumped around the world and or like different places, lived in different places and stuff like that. And then after the pandemic hit, I moved to Orange County, to California. Mm-hmm. I'm so happy there. Like, I want to be there because I'm finishing this movie, but I already know, like, what's the next story? Like, what's kind of like the chapter two of this? Because I really do view my work as chronicle, you know, as like, and that's why I give it so much time and space and attention. Like, this shit is not easy. Like, anyone that thinks that creating a movie or a song that's worthy, that's good quality, that really, it's just not easy.
Especially when you have ADHD, like we do.
Yeah, especially when you have ADHD, like we do, especially when you don't have money, like we do. I mean, it took me so much time to get the first producer to start giving me money, to start. I haven't gotten paid a single penny of my work hours, of all of the hours that I've spent filming,
wow,
putting my risk in heavy gang areas. I haven't received a single penny for my hours of filming. All of the money that I've received for this film has been investment in like crews and this and that. And so like that, I think that I've been also chronic what it is to make your first film. Like, I think a lot of people want to get into filmmaking and fuck, they think it's so easy and yeah, it's so hard and it's so competitive. And really, if you want to get into this medium, you have to, it's not, and I think it took me so long because, like I said in the beginning, I was like, my intentions were wrong. I'm going to make a film and people are, I'm going to like show my colleagues and people are going to be like, oh my
God. Yeah, I was coming from a place of ego.
And life humbled me and made it very difficult. Couldn't find the money, couldn't find the partners, went through a million obstacles. But now I'm at a point in the film, you know, especially when like some characters have passed away, when there's, you know, they've given me so much of their time that now I'm committed to pushing the project through, out of respect to all of the time and trust that they've given me, that it would be just so just incorrect of me and all this time filming and not tell the story. Now I'm like so committed to it that I just have to like make, like finish it. Cause
what were you like as a kid? Is it knowing yourself as a kid and seeing yourself as an adult, like, does it make sense? Like, you're like, oh, I definitely knew, like, from what kind of kid I was that I would, you know, accomplish these big things. Like, did you always have big dreams?
I feel like as a kid, I always have big dreams. Like, I mean, I was always into the arts. I was always into music and singing and stuff like that. And I always had, like, a lot of social action, like, this, don't treat the waiters rudely. Like, why are you talking to that person that way?
Like, you know, a sense like of justice.
Yeah, just, like, I don't like people being disrespected. Like, to me, it's just that simple. Like, I don't like when people get disrespected or humiliated or tricked. So seeing that, you know, but I don't know. People are always like, how did, you know, what was your journey? I feel like a lot of my journey has been mental. Like, some might say it's intuitive, but like my journey has always been very, very accidental. Like nothing, none of the things that I've done to this date have been planned. If that helps anybody, like if somebody's like, I want to be like her, how did she get there?
Girl.
I what to tell you.
There's no formula. The formula is do whatever feels right.
Pray every day. Like, don't fall in love with a bad person, because that will take you back a lot of steps. The formula is if there's a story you want to tell, or if there's something that you really, 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 really need the world to know, then like really think about it and meditate on it. Because again, it's like, you want, I want to make a movie about this. Why? Like, give it thought. Like,
yeah, really, there has to be a larger why, like, because the why is going to keep you working on that project when everything else, like, feels like shit. Like, your why is like, okay, but even though this was a really fucked up day, like, the reason why I'm doing this is still true.
And let me tell you one thing. Every time, and this is not, like, I go and film in very difficult places. Like, I'm filming former gang members, you know what I mean? And they're very nice to me, despite what they've done. They're very, very respectful all the time. All the time, very towards me. But believe me, in that 30-minute drive, 45-minute drive to where I'm going, my head is just running, like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? You know, like, my head is, like, I spent a lot of time. The thing is, like, my time living in El Salvador, I spent many, 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 many hours in my car alone, just driving everywhere. And I've always had a shitty car, so I didn't have, like, a nice radio. So I've spent many hours driving in silence. And when you really spend a lot of time in silence with yourself, with your thoughts, I mean, it's incredible the things that are revealed to you and the things that surface that you have to work through. And everybody was always, for such a long time, why are you making this film? What is this movie about? Who cares about gang members? And it's not. Like, these, yes, they happen to be former gang members. This is such a different story, like a story about survival. It's a story about redemption. It's a story about, you know, the children, the next generation that has to pay for the mistakes of their parents. Because if, you know, if this kid is left in the streets, then he's going to be another, you know, another gang member, even though he's the greatest thing ever. Yeah. So,
because in certain circumstances, that's part of what you have to do to survive. You either become part of a group or you're alone. What are the options there? Like, you're protected in a group, and that's, you know, that's often, it's like you said in the beginning, all of this is so circumstantial. Like I said, the genetic lottery, we could easily be trading places with any of those people. And so it's important to find the humanity in that. And I think that's what you're doing with this film. I want to know too about, I mean, you kind of like went into it a little bit, but tell me about the Obama White House, like working in it. Did you feel like out of place, or did you feel like the people that were also there, like, you fit in with them? What was that like working there?
Well, the Obama White House was the most, like, magical place in the world, of course, as you can expect. Like, there were always events, and so you always running, you know, with, like, incredible, incredible musicians.
What was,
like,
your exact job?
I was a deputy director of Hispanic media. So I was handling all of the press that I handled, all of the Latino press. So, like, Univision, Telemundo, all of the international Spanish language press. And then anything that they wanted to talk about, that they were like, hey, how do we message this to, like, the Latinos, as they would say, which we know is a monolith, like, that's a separate conversation.
Yeah, I bet.
Like, all right, here's, like, the comms and this and that and that, that, that. So the beauty of that position for me was I wasn't, like, a particularly powerful person in the White House, but I was invited everywhere. Like, I was invited to every single meeting, which is perfect because, frankly, I was in my 20s. Like, what the fuck does a powerful, like, you should not be in your 20s and have a powerful position inside of the White House.
Like, nobody in their 20s should work anywhere important because your brain is still developing. And let me tell you.
You had, like, these, like, super overachieving kids that would get, like, you know, pretty amazing positions, you know, inside the press office or whatever, and they'd be like 25, 26, and I'm like, you're anyway. But I was in every meeting, and I was in a lot of the immigration meetings. I saw, you know, right now there's a whole stuff on Biden with the child detention camps, with the, that's been rolling on Twitter. And I know exactly Homestead in Florida. I know exactly that facility because when I was at the White House, we would talk about those facilities, those child detention centers, and these, essentially, they're like these processing centers, these holding centers. Until then, they relocate the child to where they're going to relocate them to. But it's such a complicated issue because the way that it's being, the way that it's being portrayed in the media is that Biden is holding children, like detaining children, and in a way it is, but at the same time it's like all these kids are still piling up at the border, like they're showing up at the border, but then how do you process them, you know?
Yeah, like what they're like, what is the system, or there has to be, you know, because one thing, side note, because one thing I heard about the Trump administration was that there was no paperwork on these kids, and so that made like reunification nearly impossible.
Yeah. I mean, what was happening under Trump is that, you know, everybody was just piling up on, you know, Remain in Place, the MPP. So everyone was just like on the Mexico side, all these tent cities and stuff like that, because there was no processing anymore. So now it's like they're going back to what they used to do before. So this new thing that Biden is announcing is what Obama, it's the same system that Obama was implementing when he was in office, and how they would process unaccompanied children. So it's not like a new thing. It's something that has existed before. But anyway, like, going back to like what was my experience like at the White House, again, it was like to be there in those meetings and see how those decisions were being made, and you know, really be behind the scenes. I got to work with some of the smartest, like most incredibly bright people in the world, and that for me was such a blessing. And some very, very good and people as well. But, you know, I also knew that we were so insulated. We were such a bubble. Like, all of the information that we got had been filtered somehow, had been written for the White House. Imagine, like, when you look at the processes of, like, when reports get to us, like, let's say, like, the U.S. Embassy in El Salvador wants to send a report to the folks at the National Security Council at the White House about the gang situation. It goes through so...
like a game of telephone. Like, yes. So by the time it gets, yeah, like you said, it's all filtered information. So
many filters by the time it was that, like, everything that they discussed about the gang over there was just like, the gang is brutal and they're causing this mass diaspora and we need to, like, send more aid in for police funds, for military funds, for security, right? So, like, a lot of our aid decisions to Central America are driven because we think that the gangs are what is causing this displacement, right? And that's what I was like. I was like, damn, I mean, this gang, like MS-13, 18, like, holy shit, they're like, this is like cartel level power. It was incredible to me that they could cause so much displacement. And so, anyway, long story short, I also saw, before I move on from the story, like, I also saw in the White House how, like, a lot of good people were just so drunk on the power that they just didn't even care to know what the truth was or what the, you know, what really the streets were saying. For them, like, it was, like, what we said was the right thing and people needed to accept it, period. And...
was there ever a time you felt you had to, like, you know, speak up or, like, kind of, you know what I mean? Like, speak up for either yourself or... or your community?
I just didn't like the way, I mean, I was in communication, so I didn't like the way we treated the press. Like, we were so distrustful of the press. We felt like the press. And I was like, why? Like, we should tell the truth. Like, why wouldn't we want to tell the press this or that? And so I just wasn't good at handling that side of the press. Some people are really good at that. For me, it's like, if I have the truth to tell you, like, you know what I mean? Like, if I have the truth to tell you, like, what's the deal? Like, why do we have to hide it? But no, but everything had to be, like, manipulated and done, packaged and this and that. And I was like, this job is not for me. So anyway, so when Trump started running for office, I started, and I'd studied documentary filmmaking. I started making the joke that if Trump won, I was going to move to Central America. And really, I wanted to go see what was going on with the gang situation and the migrants. And so that's exactly what I did.
You just, like, there, and then I went, like, this is so, the way you just talk about, like, these things that you do to me is so, like, I don't know, because I think there's something about you that you, I don't know, you believe in yourself in a way that I'm trying to figure out how to do. Like, because I have those big dreams too, but I'm like, it's the doing of them. It's the, like, letting fear go and just going or just trying or just doing. Like, where does that come from for you?
Listen, I am not strong. Let me tell you.
Everybody always says that about themselves, but other people looking in are like, girl.
I am not here to tell you that this shit is easy. I'm here to tell you that this shit is so hard. If you want to do a career or set a chart for yourself, a path for yourself that's your own, of your own making, whether it's filmmaking, music, whatever it is that you want to do with your life, that is going to be so hard because you have to spend so much time deconstructing all of that mental shit and all of these like things that you think that you should be doing more, but I should be making more money. I should be having this career. Yeah. I should be, you know what I mean? I was fucking top of the world working at the White House. Like I could have gotten any job I wanted after that, but I was, yeah, I probably would have like a $1 million home right now in a Tesla with some like lobbyist fucking husband.
Yeah. You're like, I'll be doing real good. Don't.
Driving my Tesla and shit, you know, like that's where I would be. And, no, but that's not who I am. Like, yeah. that's not who I am. And to be honest with you, like, I don't even, at that time when I left the White House, I didn't even know who I was. Like, I had no idea.
Yeah, like, because, like, the same, it just becomes, like, a personality trait. Like, you become this part of this, like, system, and then that becomes your identity.
Yeah. Yeah, like, everybody, if you're fucking driving a Tesla, like, go get yourself a goddamn Tesla if you want to show people your money. So it's, like, that, you know, so, and I'm not bagging on Tessies, okay?
I love them. I personally, that's a goal.
Yeah, get it, but that's, but, you know, you chart your path, you do your thing. But what I'm saying is, like, when you do that, it is so, the mental, like, not just, like, put aside all the hard work of, like, put aside all the hard work of, like, having to do the work. I'm talking about like the mental work, like you telling yourself, I can make this movie. I can make this movie. What the fuck? Like this movie's going to be something.
Even when other people are telling you it's not.
But you know, yeah, even when other people are telling
like
you.
Like coaching yourself through all of this stuff.
In my case, like people were telling me, yo, like this is like an amazing project. Like this is a hell of a thing. Like go on. And I'm like, you think so? Like really? Like. You
have to convince yourself.
Yeah, you live in so much from like, why do I want to do this? Like, what? So it's just so fucking, like, anybody that wants to chart their own path, like, get ready for, like, the mental battle because, like, your demons. By the way, like, I love this quote. It says that what the devil cannot destroy, it will distract. And so I am a very protected person. I pray a lot. And so I know that the devil cannot destroy me, but fuck yeah, it distracts me. Mm. And you got to. Distractions are, you know, you gotta know.
Clubhouse.
I haven't been on there, so I can be like, but I'll be back. But you know, especially when you're trying to make something big for yourself, I mean, you're gonna get all of the obstacles and all of the motherfucking distractions thrown your way because the devil doesn't want beautiful work. Like, it doesn't want impactful work. It doesn't want people to be pushing humanity forward. It doesn't want people to be, you know, bridging sides that should be so opposite from each other. Like, the devil, like, doesn't want people like us to do this work because I think that humanity right now needs bridges. You know what I mean? We're so far divided, especially physically distanced because of this shit. So we're entering an era where we really need, like, a whole group of people that are going to be the bridges, that are going to be able to, like, take both hands and be like, come on, like, we can, like, walk along, like, let's hold each other, yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. And this movie is a bridge. Like, to me, this movie the purpose of this movie is to be a bridge. Like, I am making this movie with so many different audiences in mind. Like, when I'm making this movie, obviously for, like, a curious U.S. audience that... And, you know, this movie's not just about El Salvador. Like, all of the main characters speak English. They're L.A. deportees.
Yeah.
Like, people forget about the big-ass L.A. community that lives in Central America that's been deported. Like, they've completely forgotten about it.
Yeah.
I mean, tell you that L.A. is very, like, alive and well down in El Salvador. Like, they're here. And so, of course, I'm doing, like, part of my audience is, like, the U.S. audience. But I also hope that my movie, like, I really wish that, like, my movie that... A gang member watches my movie and he's like, damn, like, yeah, I can get out of this situation. I can try to do what these guys
can do. I can change because it's like, it's those people, like, if they can do it, why can't I? Like, because, yeah. And it's like the same exact, like, it's the representation of seeing somebody that you already felt was thrown away by society. Like, they already felt like they weren't shit. And them being able to change their life into something different and seeing that and being like, if that's possible for him, it's possible for me.
Yeah. Really, I mean, honestly, like, I mean, I know I have many different audiences for this project, but I think that for me, one of the most important audiences would be gang members themselves, to see that, to like understand, to really see themselves reflected in these stories and these struggles, and to at least have the curiosity to give it a shot. Because so many of them, I've learned that so many of them, you know, when they have children, they don't want this life for their children. Yeah. Gang members send their kids to live in the U.S. They don't want their kids to have to like deal with this thing. But then the thing, it goes back to identity. Like, when you reach an identity, when you have a status, when you have this, like, who takes that leap of, like, I'm not going to be this person? And for me, it was hard, you know, going from, like, oh, like, a DC political girl to now, like, a documentary filmmaker and da-da-da, like, as, like, silly and, like, you know, it was still hard. Imagine going from, like, a motherfucking gang member to now a Christian in a society that doesn't want to hire you, doesn't believe you.
Yeah, so in a society where there's no redemption for anyone. It's like, you are always the worst thing you've ever done. And that's what the film shows, is that you're not, and that it is possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think the film shows that if you can at least meet people at the point where they want to change, yes, like, where they are different. You know what I mean? Like, meet them there. Okay, like, you're here. Like, it's not, like, the work is not, hey, let's try to make a gang member not be a gang member anymore. Like, because you can't tell anyone to change. Change has to come when the person is ready in all of our lives. Like, when we're ready, like, when we leave a man, like, we leave a man only when we're ready, not when people tell us. And so similarly for these gang members, it's not going to be like, hey, you stop being a gang member. No, like, these are the men that, done. They're like fucking done.
I heard this quote the other day that was, or I read it somewhere that was like, everything exists in the desire the same way the entire forest exists in the seed.
Ooh, I love that.
I wish I said that, but I didn't. I read it somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's 100% right. And I think with my movie, you see them as fathers, which is another side that people don't want to see. But like, how can these men love if they kill? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, cry if they kill, you know? And so I think that's the, it's going to be a very interesting movie. I think the way it's going to be received in the U.S. is going to be very different than received here. I mean, in Salvador, we're dealing with a very, rightfully so, like, traumatized population, divided, insane. So I think that people are very apprehensive to, like, humanizing films about gang members, or in this case, former gang members. But I think another thing that people will relate, especially in El Salvador, with the film is, you know, we touch on other topics. We talk about government corruption, and corruption is also fueling this, you know, or continuing this war, because it's not in the best interest of the government for El Salvador to be peaceful. Because if it's peaceful, then there's no more money from the U.S. government.
Yeah, they profit from that violence, yeah.
Oh, they're good. We don't need to send them hundreds of millions of dollars a year in, like, aid programs for gang prevention and police and da-da-da. You know, if the gang problem gets resolved, the money stops, and then they have to take responsibility for themselves. So it's what I've learned in these years since my time at the White House to now that I'm completing the project is that, like, holy shit, like, we really, in the U.S., we don't know anything of what happens outside of U.S. borders. We're so ignorant to anything that happens, and we're so ignorant to our impact of what we do outside of our borders, because El Salvador is so dependent to the U.S. It's like its child. It's like, if, like, the U.S., like, gets angry at El Salvador for no reason, like, I mean, they probably run to China, but it's like their baby, you know what I mean? So, like, El Salvador is this child, and whatever the U.S. does, it's very, very, very felt here. It's very, very felt here. So I think that for us as Latinos living in the U.S., you know, and many of us are children of Central American immigrants, Latin American immigrants, I mean, I would also encourage you to be a little curious about what's going on in the home country of your family, of your parents. See what's, you know, so many Salvadorans in the U.S., they should be understanding what it means that, you know, what happened in the election, these past elections on Sunday, where now the president, Nayib Bukele, has almost total control of the country. And what does that mean for the people? So I really, I hope that through my work, as a U.S. Latina, as the daughter of an immigrant as well, you know, I also inspire other people to be curious about what happens outside of the U.S.
Yeah.
A little.
Mm-hmm. Because they teach us things and they tell us things that they want us to know. Like, we were talking about this in the other podcast, and it was, you know, like, even the way the textbooks are written, the way we receive the news, it's all filtered and processed so that the U.S. becomes the good guy, the hero. And that's what patriotism is. It's basically just brainwashing us so that we let them do what they need to do. Like, we don't question it. We don't question it.
It's sad because, like, you know, when you think about how gangs are being reported on, you know, there is great journalism work that's really trying to report on the side of what's the side of the history, what's the side of history on the non-official side, on the gang side, right? That's really hard. That's hard to capture, right? Because very few are doing, the government won't let you do it. But when you document history from the side of the oppressed or from the side of the evil person, really discover so many things that will never get taught in the history books. Like, you really get a deeper understanding for hypocrisy, for corruption, for, you know, how capitalism has caused so many of these troubles, greed, you know, but really, because you're witnessing firsthand the people that really get nothing from the pie.
Yeah.
Like, in the U.S., crumbs. We're getting crumbs. Like, we're getting the crumbs. Here, they're not getting anything. So when you really deal with people that really aren't getting anything at all, you're like, wow, we live in a very fucked up system.
Yeah.
Something changed. Because it can't be such a small elite. And El Salvador is the same thing. It has a small elite of very, 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 very powerful. And then a whole population that's, you know, on the verge of starvation.
Would you go into politics?
People have asked me this all the time, if I'd ever run. And my answer is funny. It's always like, number one, I've smoked so much weed in my life.
You're like, I'll never be able to pass a drug test for the White House. To be president. Wait, do they have and, to...
Like, the second part is, like, if I were to run for office, I feel like some, like, angry ex would, like... I feel like an angry ex would, like, leak photos or do something like that. And I should be like, is that what I want to do? Like, is that how I want it to be? Like, politicians are so limited, and I used to work in politics.
Yeah.
They have to be like, oh, but if I say this, like...
Yeah, you almost are restricted from ever being yourself.
You can't be yourself, man. I mean, I would love way better to be a fucking award-winning director where I can say whatever I want.
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. Hey. There's no freedom in politics, and you seem like a soul that needs to be free. they're not caging you in.
I need to be free because I feel like people that are really, I feel like people that really stand for the truth need to be free.
There it is.
You don't stand 100% for the truth, then you're not. So, and the truth is difficult, and the truth is complicated. And it's, so if you are somebody that really, that's why I love Dr. Cornel West. Like, that man is my hero because he pushes so much on integrity and standing in truth and stuff like that. And that is an unpopular opinion, right? So I don't know. Politics would have to change a lot, but the progressive movement is inspiring. I mean, I see people there that are, you know, Cori Bush and AOC, of course, people like that, that are very, very, very low, very vocal, but we have to still see just how much power they have because they are very popular, but popularity doesn't translate to power. I mean, we know that in systems, like in the systems that we have, like, we don't live in a popular system. We live in a system of power and influence.
Yeah. That's true.
So, like, AOC is probably one of the most famous politicians in the country right now. Cori Bush, all these progressives, but they can't get legislation passed because the system is set up so it doesn't let them pass that fucking legislation. You know what I mean? So these are the things, like the thing with, like, the filibuster and minimum, like, these are the things that, like, I think that people need to wake up to so we can really, like, start seeing some change.
Changing the subject, I'm like, we politics out, we're politicked out. Well, okay, so there was one last question I wanted to ask about the film, and who do you think your biggest critics will be and why?
Well, the number one I think about all the time is, in a way, the gang, of course, because we are dealing with real life characters. So the most tragic thing that anything that could ever happen is that one of your characters gets hurt for something you did. So that's something that is very top of mind in everything that I do with this movie. Like, nobody can get hurt, you know what I mean, from this film. So I've taken many scenes out that are incredible scenes that really crazy things get revealed, but I know it will get somebody in trouble. So I think that that's the first, I know that that will definitely be the first critic, but I think the movie, like I said, I think the movie is going to be received differently in different places. I think in El Salvador, it will cause a stir because the, you know, like I said, this is a population that's been traumatized by this violence. So when you're trying to portray them in a different light, and when you're trying to ask people, this group that is so horrific, mm-hmm. has the ability to have families and love and want to change, you know, like, that's a hard thing to accept. You know, forgiveness is a very hard thing for us as individuals. So I think that in El Salvador, it'll get mixed reviews. I think, you know, police and people like that will be like, oh, this is like gang promotion, and then the gang will be like, oh, he did. So like, I don't think anyone is gonna be like satisfied.
You're like, fuck them all, I'm making the movie.
I don't think anyone is gonna be
satisfied. Fuck them all, I'm making it anyway, how about that?
I'm making a movie, but for me, I don't think so much about the critics. I think about, like, I want to make a movie that my characters really feel like their story was told in a way that was
honest
and with purity
and not real, like, demonizing,
not exploiting their pain, not exploiting their story, but really respecting that they've opened their lives to me for so long. And my job as a filmmaker is to make sure that that final product, and I'm not the one that makes the final decisions. Like, people forget you have executive producers, you have funders, like, people get, especially when you're a first-time filmmaker, sometimes they don't even want to give you, like, final cut decision. Like, so you can't decide on what the final cut is. And that's something that I'm fighting tooth and nail, because I'm like, I'm not making a little...
Yeah, like, yeah, no.
For you fellas, like, we're talking about life or death here for some people. So yeah. So it's been, you know, on the business side of filmmaking, it's been interesting to really... stand up for yourself. But
we're, and how old are you? We're at same age. 33.
Look at this.
Look at that perfect skin looking glow. I saw you living out there, though. Like, there was a few stories that I was like, I am so jealous. She's living her life right now. Like, how fun has it been? Like,
what is the most beautiful country in the world? And that's another thing that I'm making sure that I'm highlighting with, like, a lot of the drone footage that we're shooting and all these beautiful transition scenes. Like, I'm really, like, showing people that this, all this fucked up stuff is going on in, like, one of the most beautiful places on earth. Mm-hmm. And, like, get it together, because I think it can be fixed. It's a small enough country that this issue can be fixed, that people can just, like, get it together.
But, yeah. So as a filmmaker, you're an artist, but, like, what kind of art do you like that's not film?
Music. My dream is to work in music. I don't know how the hell I'm going to end up working in music somehow.
Wait, is that how you ended up in the Connect the Dots room? On?
Yes, my dream is to work in music. My dream is to write music. Like, I want to write R&B artists or something. I want to write lyrics. I don't think I'd perform, because I'm behind the scenes. Like, I'm behind the camera on this. But I'm, like, somebody that just has so much to say, I feel, and, like, has so many experiences that if I can just give this to somebody to say it for me, like, go say it, girl.
Why don't you just write poems?
Poems? Because I don't want to perform.
Because you what?
I don't want to perform.
You don't have to. You can just be a written word on the paper, like, in a book that you write, so you're an author. I'm just, I'm like, yeah, now you're an author.
I'm writing the script of my film, so we are doing I'm doing almost like a narration as I, like, take the viewer through my film, and I'm writing, like, a beautiful, I call it, like, I'm writing, like, a beautiful love story, like, a beautiful love letter to El Salvador through the film, and then we're putting little things, but yeah, like, that's what it's like my love letter to the country, because I love this country, and I have dear friends in this country. Like, I'm not, like, a parachute journalist. here and was like, I'm gonna make a film about El Salvador and gangs and trying to be famous and go back to the U.S. and win all of these fucking awards, which is what a lot of filmmakers do in these countries. They come, they parachute, and then they go back, and they're the ones that win all the Sundance Awards and all of these different. And then, like, they don't use local crews. They don't have any local understanding of, like, you know, the subtleties of the country they're operating in. And, like, that's not who I am as a filmmaker. So, so all that to say that, like, I really hope that this film is something that Salvadorians are proud of, that they feel like, okay, you really took the time to tell the story in a way that's fair and...
accurate.
And fair and... Yeah, and just and compassionate.
I know you like music. I heard one time we were in a clubhouse room and I heard you talk about you know that song Get Up 10 by Cardi B?
Yeah.
I heard you reference it and I love that song. So I was like, I wanted to ask you, like, what about that song speaks to you?
Oh my God, Get Up 10 is such a song. It's like
it's an anthem.
I need to tell Cardi B one day. When my movie makes it big, I'm going to tell her that I would put that song so many times just to get the courage to go film, because I filmed so many times by myself. I shot this film so many times by myself. Imagine me with a camera and like all of these men there. So I had to really do a lot of self-talk and listen to music and Get Up 10 when nobody was giving me any money, when I went through a crazy deep problem with this movie, because I started filming it originally with my ex, and then my ex didn't want to give me access to the footage that we were shooting and all that stuff. So it, like, he really like, and then he went and sold some of that footage to another film. I mean, he's like fucking
scandalous. Like, that's fucking scandalous.
Yeah. Like just like the worst, like what he did to me, but Get Up 10, my God, like, and yeah, like, it's just such a good song.
Mm-hmm.
That is like, never been a fraud in my motherfucking life. Like, get money, go hard. Like, everything she says in that song. Just like, whatever. Like, whatever the fuck, everything. Like, anything's happening, don't, like, just keep going at it. Like, keep focusing. And this movie has been my... I mean, so much about this movie has made me grow. This movie is like my stepping into womanhood, into adulthood. Like, I feel like I'm birthing this incredible thing that's taken me 3 years to make, and now it's ready to come and see the light of day. Because, like I said, when I started shooting this, I didn't know who I was. So how are you going to be a director or an artist if you don't even know who you are?
Yeah, because in order to be that, you have to have a perspective, and you can't have a perspective unless you know who you are.
Yeah, how are you gonna have an opinion? You have no idea who you are. Like, that's why, like, you know, like, that's why I feel like a lot of the music that we listen to today and the content that we digest seems so empty. It seems so shallow. So, like, because the people that are making it for the intention of going viral.
Mass appeal. Yeah, they're chasing mass appeal.
Yeah, they're not making, like, I see that. Oh my God, I think she was here earlier, but oh yeah, no, she's still here. Like, Brown Girl Trap, like
Ashley,
like that book she made of her mother.
It's a magazine, Brown Girl Travels.
Magazine she made of her mother. I mean, like, that art is born from such a deep, deep, deep place in your soul and in your heart.
Mm.
Something that doesn't just come out easily. You know what I mean? Through a TikTok viral post or this or that. But like, when you see work like that, that you see came from like the depths of despair and pain and really like loyalty to the memory of her mother. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And love.
That's in love. Like, that's the work. Like, that is what I think we need to give space to artists to. And it's difficult because, you know, being an artist is you know, you don't make money. And everything is like quick. And so we just need to like give people time, space, so they can really create beautiful and long lasting and impactful pieces of art, because art is meant to make people feel and think.
Mm-hmm.
And so for you to be able to do that, like, you really have to think a lot and really do a lot of meditation on it.
Yeah, and a lot of like soul searching and stuff to be able to like get to a place where you have, where you're like okay enough to let it out, you know? Okay enough to let it out. Sorry, got a call. But the thing that we were talking about was getting to know yourself, and like what has been the most helpful thing you've done that has helped you get to know yourself better?
You know what? The whole thing that happened to me was when my ex left me, when we had first started shooting this film, and he took the footage and all that stuff. And that was the most painful, painful situation, because I'd been filming with him for about a year. And he just wanted to do that to me. But I'd been relying so much on him for filming. I didn't believe that I could film this project without him. Mm. And then that experience, being kicked out the house, is what made me just my own camera and put it and say, well, you know what? Just fucking do it. Like, go. And like, a lot of my early work was like ugly and this and that, but then I kept going and kept going and kept going and kept going. And with this project, like, people have seen that I'm consistent. Like, I have characters that like a gentleman that he died, and I'm gonna go and have dinner with his family tomorrow, and they're like, wow, even though he died, like, you still remember him. Come see us. And I'm like, absolutely, because you're not just like, oh, now he's dead and we can't film anymore. Like,
yeah, no, they weren't just a character to you. That's someone that's a part of your life now.
Absolutely. So so I think that of course 100% the most painful things that happen in our life are definitely the ones that catapult us into that growth. And like I said, it really was helpful for me to spend a lot of time alone. And I think people need to spend a lot of time alone in silence.
Yes.
Like because when you're in silence, people, like your ancestors start talking to you. You start getting your downloads, the messages that you really need to hear, they really start coming to you. And learning how to be alone in silence has been, you know, incredibly helpful to me. You know, I'm still growing. I'm still dealing with ADHD. You and I are sisters in this fight. Like, I'm still, you know, fighting through the anxiety that I feel. I suffer from extreme anxiety. When I was on this trip, when the first week I got here, I couldn't eat. I wasn't eating like a single thing for like a whole week. I have an emotional stomach. So when I'm anxious, like, my stomach just like locks up. Like, and when I wake up, I open my eyes and like straight to the bathroom, like,
you know, well, you said you were going through a little bit of a depression when you first got there, and then something happened and you were able to be like, all right, fuck it, let's go get the equipment, let's go. Like, you weren't gonna film.
Yeah, I wasn't gonna film. I was so depressed when I first got here, and then I was just like, it was just like a, you know, like, just fucking do it. Like, and then I started like meeting with the characters again, and then I filmed a scene, and the second you film that first scene, then you get like, okay, like, let's go full throttle. Ooh. And now I've been like, you know, I have like a bunch of different stuff that I have to film, but to get yourself to the action of doing it and driving and all that stuff, that takes so much energy that I think we underestimate how much energy it takes for us to like push forward, especially those of us that are like kind of trying to chart our own path. You know, I feel like we have to be kinder to ourselves, but we also have to be like more accountable to ourselves.
Yeah. So it's like, you have to be able to get to a place where you keep your promises to yourself. Like, that's the realest form of self-care, is like, you know, setting boundaries and, but being able to say, I'm going to do this, and keeping your word to yourself has been like the hugest thing. Well, they're going to kick us off in like 2 minutes. So before we go, I want you to, well, first, I just want to say I love you so much. And I thank you for like just letting me in, because you are like a, you know, like a never ending pool of just like creativity and inspiration and like just a lot like motivation, because it really motivates me to see my friends creating and to, you know, feel close to that in some way. And it makes me, makes me happy. So I want you to, so the last thing I want you to say is I want you to just kind of craft a message for an aspiring filmmaker who might be listening right now.
I would say to get ready. It's very, very mentally and emotionally demanding. So have a very clear plan on how you're going to handle yourself emotionally and mentally for this gig. And to know that it's incredibly hard. It takes a lot of time and a lot of patience, but it goes back to keeping a promise to yourself. And if you embark in a project, you have to finish it. You have to pull through. It doesn't matter how long it takes. It's not about time. Nothing is about time. It's about finishing. It doesn't matter how, just finish it.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter how slow you go, as long as you don't stop.
Don't stop.
I love you. Thank you so much. Okay, I'll talk to you later on Clubhouse, but we'll have to have a whole nother podcast about that so we can. I'm down. Bye. Guys, that was the best thing ever. Don't you love her? Don't you love her? I know we got a lot of comments, but I was too focused on the questions I was asking her. Let's see. Yeah, we have lots of comments. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Like, man, Valentina just is somebody that inspires me. So I'm glad I got to share her with you today. And thank you for listening to the Millennial Miha podcast. And this will be on here, so you can share it with anybody else. And if in case anybody missed it, I'm going to share it on my story. And also it will be available in a few weeks on the Millennial Miha podcast, which is streaming on all platforms. So thank you so much for listening. Bye.
Hello?
It's the Mother Fucking Millennial Miha podcast.